Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. 2020 was the year of the pandemic puppy boom. Stuck at home with little companionship and lots of free time, many decided that the pandemic was the right time to adopt a furry friend. That is, if they were able to get approval. As a new piece from The Cut explores why it's become harder than ever to adopt a rescue dog. Gone are the days when you could just show up at a shelter and leave with a little cute guy just out or gal a couple of hours later. Now, many would-be dog adopters are being asked to fill out forms that seem more like background checks for the Secret Service than an application to take home a pet. According to reporting from Ali Conti, who started as safety measures to ensure a good match between a dog and a person, has morphed into some really weird power dynamics. Ali reported on this for The Cut. Her piece was called, "It's a Dog's Market. Adopting used to be a good thing people could do these days. You're probably not good enough." Allie, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Allison.
Listeners, we want you to weigh in. Have you had difficulty adopting a rescue dog? What was the process like for you? What's a question you were asked that really shocked you or took you aback? And if you were rejected, were you given a reason why? We want to hear your experience with dog adoption. Give us a call at 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. You can also tweet to us at All of It WNYC. If you'd like to remain anonymous, you can send us a DM via Instagram at All of It WNYC. So, Allie, when did you first become aware that of this difficulty in pet adoption, that there was a growing problem with people being rejected?
Well, you know, like many people who I interviewed for this story, I started sort of exploring the idea of getting a rescue dog during the pandemic and was really surprised by some of the questions that, you know, I was being asked right off the bat. And this was just filling out the application. I didn't even get to the interview process, but my editor ended up having a kind of similar experience where she was surprised by how complicated things had gotten. So together we kind of came up with the idea of interviewing people and seeing if this was a huge thing around New York.
What were some of the questions when you were filling out that initial paperwork that you thought, like, wow, this is a thing?
Sure. I mean, you had to sign an agreement essentially stating, and this is just one of the rescues, that you were going to put the dog on CBD oil. You would agree to using a really expensive raw food diet and getting a trainer that, you know, was one that they had already approved and it was quite expensive. It just actually seemed like you were entering into like a lifelong contract with some of these rescues where you would just have them kind of breathing down your neck forever. And it would be a really sort of complicated, you know, ongoing situation.
Let's pull out a little bit. How did the past year change dog adoption overall? It seems like everyone was adopting or fostering in 2020.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, such as myself, were suddenly at home, had, you know, long periods of time where they didn't really have other obligations and, you know, had been thinking about getting a dog for a long time and kind of decided now is the time, now or never. It's never going to be, you know, like this again where I'm going to have as much time to dedicate to a dog. So a lot of these rescues started seeing, you know, triple the number of applications or 50 applications for one dog, whereas usually they'd be, you know, begging people to take the dog. It became, you know, like I said in the story, sort of a dog's market.
And you write about that most of the process, the adoption process has moved online, with some shelters becoming sort of influencers in a way. How has moving the adoption process online made things more difficult or changed the tenor of things?
Sure. Honestly, you know, you can fill out applications online. And a lot of people that I interviewed said they would, you know, between the hours of midnight and 3 a.m. just be scrolling through their phones, filling out application after application. And the sort of ease of application and the fact that you can do a lot of this process online probably does explain some of the numbers. You know, if you can fill out 50 applications a night, you know, that's obviously going to impact the number of applications that these rescues are seeing.
Let's take a couple of calls. Thais on line one is calling in from Watch Hill. Hi, Thais. Thanks for calling All of It. What was your experience?
Hi. I'm actually calling from Watchung, New Jersey.
Oh, Watchung.
And,
sure.
Yes. And I was rejected from one particular rescue agency for 13 reasons. And the main one that caught me a little off guard was that they felt that I wouldn't be able to afford the dog food.
Huh.
I'm a registered nurse.
You are a registered nurse who was turned down because they thought you couldn't afford the dog food.
That was one of the 13 reasons, yes.
Wow.
What kind of dog food were they asking you to buy?
Oh, it didn't even get that far. They just assumed.
Okay.
I don't know. And they thought that we wouldn't have enough time to dedicate to the puppy that we were interested in. Well, a few puppies we were interested in. Mm. There are three adults in our household who are ready, willing, and able to contribute to the care of the puppy. They were concerned about outdoor time, square footage of the house, like to make sure that there was enough space for the animal inside the dwelling. It was...
I can hear your frustration.
It encouraged people to go to a breeder. That's how bad it is.
Well, we're going to talk about that in just a minute. Thais, thank you so much for calling in. You know, it's sort of interesting you meant the food, because you mentioned that in your article. At least one of the places that you wrote about wanted people to have a specific kind of food, and it was very expensive.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there were different versions within that brand, but one of them went up to $250 per bag, which is very expensive. Not a lot of people can afford that.
My guest is Allie Conti. She wrote a piece in The Cut called It's a Dog's Market about dog adoption. You go into the bit of the history of rescuing dogs. When did the rescue dog first start to become viewed as a positive thing, worthy addition to the home?
Sure. So I wrote a little bit about some of the Disney movies that, you know, people may remember, Old Yeller. And then, you know, there were various riffs on that throughout the decades, you know, Flipper, all these sorts of, you know, Rin Tin Tin. You had all these kinds of movies and TV shows, you know, showing the positive impact that a pet could have upon a home. And then in the 80s, there was a lot of research coming out of the University of Pennsylvania that talked about some of the positive health aspects that pet ownership could have on humans. So that is kind of where the puppy boom came from. People were desperate and clamoring to get a dog for the health benefits since about the 80s.
I want to take Marianne on line 8, because I think she's going to help us out, because she works in animal welfare and wants to make sure we're using the right language. And she says we're not really using the right language at the moment. Marianne, help us out. What's up?
Hi there. And just to be clear, I used to work in animal welfare. Okay. I worked for an organization that assisted shelters and rescues. There is a difference, a very big difference, between a rescue and a shelter, especially when you're talking about New York City and other large cities like L.A. A municipal shelter is very different from a rescue. For instance, the AC&C in New York City has to take in every single abandoned animal, and in addition to things like bite holds and providing end-of-life services for, you know, not everyone can afford to have their family pet put down humanely. They mm-hmm. also offer that. But the big thing is that the application process is also very different.
Mm-hmm.
So conflating these, like, 13 reasons why you can't have one of our dog rescues is a very different experience than if you were going to the New York City shelter that has tons of dogs. And I think, and I'm not going to speak to individual rescues, because there are tons of rescues that each have their, you know, they're filled with personalities, and these are not money-making businesses. They're usually people who are rescuing dogs on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And they are able to take which dogs they think they can adopt out and hold on to them, and they create their own adoption process. It's
gotcha.
Very different I'd also just like to point out mm-hmm. that there, in addition to this article on dog adoption, which had gone so viral, the other ones that, you know what, maybe these rescues are right to be so exclusive, or not exclusive, but discerning, because exactly what we all feared at the beginning of this adoption boom, all of us who were familiar with the shelter system knew that it was going to come down on the other side, and yes, people who are rescuing dogs, adopting dogs, now that the world is opening back up and going to like the before times, they're dumping the dogs at the shelter.
Right. We were going to get into that in just a minute. I'm glad you brought that up. And I appreciate you making the clarification so we don't confuse the two words. Thank you very much, Marianne, for calling in. Let's try to get to some people who did have difficult experiences trying to adopt a dog. Let's go to Lana. Lena on line six. Hi, Lena. I think that's how I pronounce your name. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, it's Lena. We lost our dog about a year ago, and he was very much an emotional support dog for our family. And we needed to get another dog right away. And we tried probably 10 or more rescues, filling out application after application, and you know, what you have to do, it becomes a full-time job. It's like you have to apply for a specific dog and then check and see if more are available. And finally, I almost hired an adoption liaison, kind of something I invented, but I put like an in search of mm-hmm. out there, someone who I could pay to like do all this work for me, because with the kids and everything, I couldn't devote the time it took to finding a dog. So I even called the shelters, and we had no luck. Finally, I found Best Friend's Dog Rescue, or Your New Best Friend. It's called Your New Best Friend Dog Rescue. It's in Summit, New Jersey, and they have a different kind of system. You fill out your application, they approve you once, and then they post videos of all of the dogs. It's live videos on Facebook, all the dogs they have right now. You can send them a Facebook message. You get to go and meet three mm-hmm. dogs, and you can go home with one of the dogs because you've already been approved. And if you don't go home with the dog, it's probably going to be gone by the next time, you know, you try to go meet them. So we did end up getting a dog. We got a small breed puppy. We are very excited and happy. Gemma, my daughter, might like to tell you her name. Nope, Bumblebee.
Okay, fine.
Okay. So we named her Bumblebee, and we're very happy, and she's great for our family.
I'm glad that worked out for you. Thank you for sharing your story. Allie, before we go to break, we'll take some more calls after the break. I do want to bring, because a couple people have made the point that Marianne made the point, is perhaps mm-hmm. the bar needs to be high, especially this year, given the concern that people will... It was an emotional choice to get a puppy and not a realistic one.
Sure. And I was unable to find a lot of evidence that people are returning these pandemic puppies. There was a Reuters article, and maybe that is what she was referring to, that was kind of based on some anecdotal evidence in California. It was kind of built around a quote from a woman who ran a rescue there. And the dynamics are a bit different in California. There are a lot more dogs available for a variety of reasons. They don't spay and neuter as much there. There's just more dogs available. So if that is what she is referring to, I'm aware of it, but I wasn't able to find any evidence that was happening in New York.
We're discussing Allie Conti's piece, It's a Dog's Market. Adopting used to be a good thing. Good people could do. These days, you're probably not good enough. We'll take more of your calls after the break. This is All of It. This is All of It on WNYC. My guest is Allie Conti. The piece she wrote is called It's a Dog Market, about how difficult it has become to adopt a rescue dog. And it's interesting that a lot of the questions, one of our first callers mentioned this, Allie, that they looked at her financials and decided that she was not going to be able to care for this dog. And, you know, of course you want to make sure someone can actually afford to have a dog, but some of those questions I'm wondering if it is any sort of like, I don't know, financial discrimination?
It's interesting. First of all, I just want to say I know a lot of these rescue agencies have different philosophies about who they adopt to, but, you know, I think that they all have what's in the best interest of the dog at heart. But if you have a ton of applications for one dog, it does make a certain amount of sense to try to give it to the person who can provide the best home for it, right? Which in a lot of cases probably translates to having money in a large apartment with a yard and things like that. But on the other side, you know, we have decided as a society that owning a pet is one of the most meaningful things that you can do, and it's good for your health and all these other things. It is kind of ethically dubious to only have that, you know, experience be available to, you know, the 1%, right? So it is an interesting moral question.
Let's go to Jen on line 9. Hi, Jen. Thanks for calling All of It.
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to say I loved Allie's article. I read it when it came out and really related to it. Second, I want to affirm everything everyone said before me, both that the criteria are ridiculous and that I feel I'm glad the shelters and rescues are doing good due diligence. I'm lucky. I've been approved by 5 different groups. I'm trying to find a particular type of dog, one that's cat friendly. And I like the underdogs, the ones that no one else really wants. I was rejected by one agency who, there was an older hound dog. He'd been there for 3 or 4 years. I loved this guy. She would not even have a phone call with me because my building would not give her a list of breeds that were forbidden. And the building management company said, there are no such breeds. Talk to the board president. And she refused to talk to the board president. And I said, I'm sorry, I've got to move on. But here's a dog in need, a well-qualified person. And they still wouldn't even discuss it because they didn't meet this criteria that didn't apply. And there's no flexibility. Hmm. So it's very difficult. I'm one of the lucky ones. I met a dog today that I might be able to pick up this weekend. But it's very challenging. And there are a lot of very needy dogs.
Thank you for calling in. If everybody wants to get in on this conversation, our number is 646-435-7280. Have you had a difficult time adopting a rescue dog? What was your process like? Was there a question you were asked that really surprised you? So, you know, it's interesting, Allie. Who are the people? Who are the gatekeepers?
Well, it's a lot of volunteers, right? So these are people who really care about dogs and are trying to find the best possible homes for them. You know, they're often, you know, millennials. They're not getting paid. They're people who give up their weekends to go to these adoption events and, you know, grill people about, you know, why they think they should get this dog. But yeah, they're not getting paid or anything like that.
So I guess the next level question is, they're not necessarily people with a particular expertise.
Well, usually they're people who have done fostering themselves, so mm-hmm. they're, okay. you know, pretty involved in the rescue organization before they begin, you know, screening applications themselves.
One person you interviewed for this story had a feeling that her family was being rejected because one of her children has autism. Did you talk to other people right. who thought they'd been discriminated against?
You know, only after the article came out did I have people email me and say that they had similar experiences to that. You know, it's hard to figure out who these people are looking for. Oftentimes, you know, having a kid is considered a disqualifying factor, which, you know, is not intuitive because, you know, people think dogs and pets or pets and children go together. And in fact, you know, the child welfare movement and the rescue movement kind of, started around the same time. So that's really not something that people expect, but having kids who are like under 10 years old, a lot of people don't like that and don't want to adopt them.
Aaron on Twitter said, we went months trying to adopt a pup in New York City, Ivy League level applications, never even got rejected, just silence, fence and yard question, always where we got stopped. They found their pup. If you want to go on our Twitter and see that, that's where I don't want to give out the name over the air. If somebody wants to go check it out themselves, they can. Let's talk to if Catherine is still on line 10. Hi, Catherine, are you there? Oh, Catherine's on hold. We're going to try to do some radio magic and get her on the air. Catherine, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, tell us your story.
So we have an almost 13-year-old yellow lab, and seeing the end of his life coming soon, we wanted to overlap and get another dog, which might sound a little morbid, but we felt that it would be better for our family that way than to have that sort of emptiness in between. So we were rejected from a ton of different shelters, rescue places, sometimes they don't even tell us why. And one place told us that we were rejected because Oliver, our current dog, did not have a specific vaccine in 2018 because they called our vet. So we looked into it thinking, oh no, we've missed something. And turns out the vet said, no, he's a bit too old to be getting that booster. I wouldn't want to do that to him. But too little too late, you know, that we had already been rejected. So that was something we experienced over and over in different ways.
Catherine, thank you for calling in with your experience. So, Allie, I'm curious, you know, you spoke to volunteers, and it seems like they were overwhelmed. What did the volunteers wish people understood about this process?
Sure. I mean, they really do want people to understand that they are unpaid and they're doing this, you know, out of the kindness of their heart. And, you know, this has led to some pretty hard feelings. They get some nasty emails in response. You know, when people are rejected, they tend to lash out. And they just want people to understand that, you know, they're volunteers who are sort of doing the best they can.
You've heard some people saying, we've had people tweet that they are thinking about going to a breeder after this experience. What is the issue with buying from a reputable breeder?
Oh my goodness, I'm probably not the best person to answer this question. People have some pretty serious, you know, this is like
strong
a pretty
feelings.
Heated sort of debate, right?
Well, so,
a lot of people who would say there's nothing wrong with it. But,
right, let me re-ask it. Let me re-ask this. It's more, I guess the better question is, why is buying a dog in some circles frowned upon?
Sure. I think, you know, the sort of supply and demand issue has become, you know, a bit less acute than it was maybe when people who are my age, you know, millennials were growing up. You know, it used to be that you could walk into any sort of rescue and walk out with the dog the same day. I mean, I did that when I was a kid, and now you can't. So people still have this idea that there are, you know, tons of dogs that need to be rescued or in imminent danger, and that's just kind of not the case in New York City. It's actually kind of hard to get a rescue dog. In the South, you can still do that. You can walk in and get a dog pretty quickly. But, you know, when you say you bought a dog, people are remembering, you know, sort of that Sarah McLachlan ad from growing up, and they just kind of have a reaction that's a bit anachronistic.
Let's go to Jay from Seaport, who has a different point of view on this. Hi, Jay. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. I'm a big fan. It just maybe my statement is going to be very different from everybody else.
That's okay.
I live near about five minutes away from a beach. And there are signs that are posted where dogs not allowed year-round, yet people still come with dogs to the beach. So just because somebody, in my opinion, wants a pet doesn't mean that they make a good pet parent. Because we see all these different animals out there abandoned, being malnourished, you know, what have you. So I don't believe that some of these agencies are discriminating per se, but trying to do right by those animals because they know what those animals go through from folks who do not know how to properly handle them.
Jay, thanks for calling in. Yeah, it's really interesting. Our calls and our tweets are really split, and I'm sure you had that same experience after writing this article of, yes, the bar needs to be super duper high, and then other people are saying, like, I am a great family, and some for no reason, I don't know why I couldn't get a dog. It's just, it's so interesting, the split, and of course, people are very passionate and emotional about these things. How did the pandemic affect fostering? Is fostering a faster way to adoption? Is it maybe the better way?
Sure. So that kind of used to be the sort of tried and true way to prove yourself worthy at some of these more competitive rescues. But one of the women that I interviewed for this piece was sort of a prolific foster parent, and things got so competitive during COVID that even though she was like well known and beloved within the rescue industry, she was getting denied to adopt. So that's just kind of a snapshot into how crazy things were. But usually, that's how you can really kind of prove yourself to these people.
In our last moment, you talked to the executive director of Muddy Paws Rescue, who decided to do things a little differently. Will you explain, if you can, in the next minute?
Yeah, sure. So the split that you were describing that you're seeing on Twitter, this is actually an active debate in the rescue world. So she's sort of a proponent of what's known as open adoption, which is sort of giving the would-be rescuers the benefit of the doubt. So you're not looking for reasons to deny applicants. You're looking for ways that you can work with them to sort of educate them. And if they're lacking in certain areas, you give them the tools that they need in order to become a perfect applicant.
The name of the piece is It's a Dog's Market. It's by Ali Conti. It was in the cut for New York Magazine. I'm going to leave with this one little last comment from Lisa. I worked at a private shelter for wealthy people. I've seen plenty of horror stories. Money doesn't equal good ownership. Interesting thought to go out on. Ali, thank you so much for sharing your reporting. And listeners, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and opinions. We really appreciate it. Thanks, Ali.
Thank you so much. It was fun.